We're doing in Yaakov. We had learned about the Sadducee that saw Rava learning intently, and his fingers were under his feet. And as he was applying pressure to his fingers, they were bleeding. And so he made fun of him. And he said, you're quick talkers. You're a nation that acts before you think. Look, you were quick to say Nase before Nishma. You were quick to accept the responsibility of the mitzvot without understanding what you were getting into. Here, you're so focused on getting the information, you're not even noticing what you're doing to yourself. So Rava answered him, and he said, we are tumat yesharim tanchem. We are people who are honest and straight, so we can work honestly and straight with Hashem, and we can be whole with Him, and we can trust Him, and that's why we were willing to say, we'll do whatever you say. But you guys are all full of tricks, and that's why you can't trust other people either, because you know how you behave, so you're very concerned of that other people might trick you as well. We know that we're honest and straight, so we can be accepting and trusting of others. Part of our ability to give trust depends on who we are. The question here is, was it a Sadducee? The Talmud says Ahut Tzeduki. There was that Sadducee. Do you have the Gemara Shabbos here? No. Okay. Maybe let's see over here. 1 second. Here it also says Sadducee, and it doesn't give us an indication that there's any other version of what it should say. So who were the Sadducees? Did we discuss this last week? Did we discuss the Tosefta and Rosh Hashanah and in Yuma? No. Okay. So the Tosefta and Tractate Yuma records a story. We had many arguments with the Sadducees about how to interpret the verses. We went with tradition, and they went with what they thought was right. The Sadducees kept changing their opinions, but they sometimes had the ear of the king. And this is an insight that one of you guys gave me. One of the students at the Mechon once pointed this out to me. It troubled me a lot. That in Megillat Ta'anit, we have a record that at some point in the Second Temple, the Sadducees had the majority in the High Court, and the rabbis celebrated the day that they regained majority of the High Court. So I wondered, it blew me away, how did they ever gain a majority in the High Court? And then one of the students pointed out to me that we had a few eras during the Second Temple that anyone who wasn't a Sadducee was being killed by the king. And so the rabbis went into hiding. So it's not, it doesn't put into question anything. You know, if a rabbi can't stand and say, I adhere to our tradition without being killed, then you could understand that the Sadducees took control of the High Court. I never put the two thoughts together.
The priesthood got corrupt, maybe also. I don't know. The priesthood got corrupt.
Right.
You buy into your way.
Well, over here it wasn't so much a matter of being corrupt that way. It was more that by power of the sword, they couldn't show up. They'd show up and get killed. So they killed out as many rabbis as they could find, and all the other rabbis had to go into hiding. So of course the Sadducees were able to take control of the High Court. Yes?
Is it possible that there were some undercover people in the court who kind of would try to slip in?
Could be.
Okay.
Could be. This was a constant challenge. Talmud says they definitely lived in the Second Temple period with a fear that they didn't know who was a Sadducee and who wasn't. Uh-huh. It was not known. People didn't publicize their beliefs.
Is it possible there was anybody who tried to slip into the High Court who did adhere to tradition?
Sure.
During the time of, okay.
Yeah. It went both ways. Sure.
Or the one guy who poured the miso kamayim on his feet.
Right.
They didn't ask him.
What?
They didn't ask him. Might have been an accident.
Okay, maybe. I don't think so. Coming back to the story of the Sadducees. So, the Sadducees adopted Epicureanism. They said, you have to enjoy, because who knows what will happen tomorrow. And they lived the good life, a high lifestyle. And they said, we don't trust the rabbis. We don't know if there's an afterlife. We don't know what's yet to come. Just enjoy it. And then they would interpret the Torah any way they saw fit, which was also a way of permitting many things for themselves. And so we had this ongoing challenge during the period of the second Beit HaMikdash, the second temple, that there were Sadducees all over. And this overlap between Sadducees, Baitusees, Karaites and Kutim. So there were really four sects, which we view as the same thing, but they weren't really the same. They were similar. At the end of the day, they all kept fluctuating because they had no tradition. They wouldn't accept the tradition. So if we take the Gemara the way we have it, that it says that Sadducee, so the Sadducees, our sages say, they argued one case, but they were really fighting for another case. They were arguing, we don't trust the rabbis, who knows if their tradition is true. But in fact, they were looking to permit for themselves promiscuity. They were looking to permit for themselves to indulge in their hedonistic desires. They were looking for an excuse. They were looking for an out. So they presented it as though their argument was, we don't trust the rabbis. And if we read it the way the Talmud writes, the reason I question it is because sometimes the Talmud would write, it was an early Christian. And the Christian censors wouldn't let them publish that. So they would switch it and say it was a Sadducee. That was sometimes the word Sadducee is code that they just couldn't print the word, an early Christian who they were arguing, who started this debate with Rava. So I'm not sure. But in the Talmud it says a Sadducee. So if it's a Sadducee, so Rava's telling him, you guys are dishonest. You guys claim you want the pure text of Torah. But in fact, you don't go with the pure text of Torah. You go with interpretations that really suit your fancy. Now, the Sadducees were a little bit on the line in that they argued vehemently, overtly, but privately, many of them would retain the tradition we had. They led their lives on tradition. It was an ongoing challenge. An example of this we see in the Tosefta and Tractate Yuma. The Torah describes the Anani Ra'a La Kaporet. I will be seen over the Aron. The top of the Aron is called the Kaporet on Yom Kippur with a cloud. So our tradition is that when the Kohen Gadol enters the Holy of Holies, he puts down the coals and then he pours onto the coals the special incense, the Ktores, and then the cloud comes out and he walks out and says his prayer and walks out. That's the one of the main processions of Yom Kippur. They wanted to interpret the verse, I will be seen with a cloud, that the Kohen Gadol should put the incense on the coals before he enters, so that as he enters, there'll be a cloud there. Hashem will appear, so to speak, with the cloud. So they would want the Kohen Gadol to put the incense on the coals before he entered the Holy of Holies. We would always interview the Kohen Gadol and review with him what we demand of him and make him swear by Hashem's name he won't change from what he was taught. So the Talmud says that the Tosefta records that one year there was a young Kohen Gadol, and after doing the work of Yom Kippur, he came to his father and said, you guys always preached and you never did it. I did it. And his father said to him, I wonder if you'll live out your year. And he didn't. He died that year. So that's a very interesting conversation. The father preached to the son, we should do it the way we say, not the way the rabbi said. Then the son comes one year and says, I was going Gadol this year. I did what we always preached. And you see, he's boasting to the father, you were talking no action. I did the action. And the father looks back at him and says, I wonder if it's going to work. I wonder what'll happen to you. Wait a second, didn't the father teach the son? I mean, he was the one who preached it to him to begin with. So from here we get a big insight as to what was really going on with the Sadducees. It wasn't a vehement fight against us, in that their ideology was fickle. We have a similar thing today with different sects in Judaism, where they might argue with us publicly, But privately, there are, I know where I grew up in Muncie, the conservative rabbi, when his own daughters had to get married, he called up the Orthodox rabbi and asked, can you please marry off my daughters? I want them to be kosher. When he brought a Sefer Torah to the shul, he brought a printed one. He didn't, he brought a typeset one, computer printed, whatever. He wouldn't go with tradition. So his congregation, that's what they had. But when he married off congregation, so he did whatever he thought he should do. But when it came to his own daughters, he said, I want to make sure it's kosher. Coming back to our Gemara. So Rava says to the Sadducee, he says, it's a reflection of who you are. And this is a reflection of who we are. Now, built into Rava's answer is our approach to the Torah. If I come to the Torah and I say, it's going to say what I think, so then, to some degree, I'm saying, God, I'm not giving you an open check. You're not going to tell me whatever you want. The flip side is, when we say Naaseh v'Nishma, what we're saying is, you're the boss. What do I know? This is a far more complex question than I'm making it out to be. Meaning, it's easy to say, Hashem's the boss, of course we're going to do whatever He says. We could really delve into this. There's much more to be discussed here in the concept of Naaseh v'Nishma. We have a concept in Halacha that says, Svarai lama likra. It's basic logic. I don't need a pasuk. So the Talmud is saying that in certain ways, logic precedes Torah. Because the Gemara says, if you could have figured it out, you don't need a verse. How do I know I'm not allowed to kill to save my own life? If they tell me, kill or you'll die, how do I know I'm not allowed to kill? What verse indicates it? Talmud says, it's logic. It's logic. There are many mitzvot in the Torah, and I don't have to give up my life for them. How do I know I can't kill someone else to save my own life? The Talmud says, it's logic. Well, why do you think your life is worth more than his? Oh, but I do. I'm important. What, are you kidding? And the Talmud says, no, your basic logic should tell you that every human being is important, and you can't kill him in order to save your own life. We have this concept in a few places in Talmud. So there is a concept of logic and morals and ethics that have to be a part of our life and have to be healthy enough that certain things don't even have to be stated in the Torah. So then comes the major question, where do I draw the line and say whatever God says is ethical and moral? And where do I say, wait a second, but I am supposed to have my own logic and my own understanding of what's ethical and moral. If the Talmud didn't say that, then we would say the Torah is our only ethical and values and moral compass. But then the Talmud comes back and tells me some things you should have understood on your own. The Torah doesn't have to tell you everything. Certain things you should understand. So I do have to understand. Now, this leads to a Pandora's box, a whole discussion of where is my logic supposed to play in my moral system? Chozrim b'tshuva generally want the Torah to tell me everything. The general approach is it's black and white. What the Torah says, that's what I'm supposed to do, and that's it. Don't leave me with any gray area that I'm supposed to figure out. It doesn't exactly work that way. The Torah does want us to have a certain amount of understanding of human values that should be intrinsic to the human being. And proof of it is that a non-Jew growing up in Mozambique is supposed to figure out that he's not allowed to murder. He's not allowed to kill. He never heard of Judaism. He never heard of Noahide laws. He's supposed to somehow figure out he's not allowed to kill. That means on some level, the Torah gave us a moral compass that's built in, and every human being has to tap into it. So that's why I'm saying this concept that we say, well, we're straight, we're honest, we're giving our trust to Hashem. It has to be honed a little bit. It's not that simple to just say that. who was first? Yes, Benny.
I have heard different interpretations in different ways regarding things like, I don't know if I could say it exactly right in just a short question. Had to do with that originally we weren't allowed to eat animals. Well, I guess originally Adam didn't eat animals. And then when eventually Noah did, he kind of phrased it in a way that don't eat blood, but you can't eat the animal. It was like he wanted to make sure because he couldn't quite say don't eat animals. But it was like in a way also with regards to the Kohen Gadol, that they can't be a Baal Mum. and that's more of a reflection of us than what the Torah has to say, in the sense that, I think we even talked about that here, that if a person comes to the temple and he sees that the Kohen has a limb or he's missing a hand or something, he will think less. It's one of the Teriyag Mitzvot, but that has to do with our viewing of the temple. On the other hand, also with it would make a lot of sense to say, for the seven Noach at Lazal Tzitzah, but there's stuff like, and you know, Ever Minachai, more or less, but things like Avodah Zarah, if you take the Avodah Zarah that doesn't actually harm anybody specifically, I don't think if someone growing up in India or wherever they, you know, Southeast Asia, they would think this is morally incorrect, right?
It's a long series, not even a class.
People sacrifice their children. Right, but it was morally correct.
I'm saying one that doesn't involve hurting someone. I'm saying to put that on the same level as of logic as don't murder someone.
Well, I made a point and said don't kill, you know, illegal, which is really just don't murder, as we say. And then it was a question,
right,
of,
that logic.
It was perfectly fine if it wasn't one of your tribe or your clan. You used to eat each other in Mozambique. Not just Mozambique, United States, a couple of hundred years ago. I mean, they were bad people, or depending to their way of thinking. I mean, Hashem maybe said at some point, maybe that's the Noahide laws that we have to teach, but there's very little that you could think is intrinsically ingrained in us, other than it can't run a society that way otherwise. But that's
not,
you think that the worth of every human being, the dignity, is something people are supposed to figure out without.
We'll talk about it. We're out of time. I want people to make it to Meirav. We'll talk about that.